When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hey, what do you know? It's the most productive day of the week, according to Lori, Tuesday. So let's get productive. Let's put on a show.
Rocco, it's not just me. That is, studies have shown. Tuesdays are the most productive days of the week.
I was very productive today. In fact, we just got done shooting a video.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh.
We really did our she shanty.
She shanty.
She shanty. Be careful how you say that fast.
I know. Oh my gosh.
I completely forgot to lip sync.
Yeah. I just danced
and performed.
She did, and I just laughed and lip synced. And now B. Arthur is challenged with editing us all trying to be social distance and doing this and doing that in front of the man wall.
Oh my gosh.
Take a final glance at the hamaconda. Take a final glance at the hamaconda. Take a final glance at the hamaconda. Now that we're remodeling.
I'm thinking of
rock and roll 1752
right.
style.
And I'm thinking of some of the guests that we've had in over the years who come in and they're actors. Maybe they're coming to town to be at the Guthrie or they're coming in town to do something. And they sit down and they just take a pause and stare at the man wall.
To see if they're up there.
That's one of the things, to see if they're
up
there.
Or who they know.
I mean, it has led to, it's kind of like.
It's an icebreaker.
It's a great icebreaker having all these stars up on the walls. It kind of felt, I don't think it's gone for long. I feel the remodeling maybe could be temporary and it could come back.
Yeah, I certainly hope so, Julia.
Because it's all Velcroed and laminated. I spent many hours laminating all the pages from People magazine.
Yes, you did.
And well, so, just think how much better you guys are going to sound when that soundproofing material goes up on the wall.
It's
going to
improve.
Eight
and a half years.
What's been wrong with the sound? Would we sound different, really?
No, that's just what they try and tell us for making us feel better about taking down the manual.
Okay. Yeah. Well, and we'll look so much better on camera because we aren't fighting with, you know.
Because we've been on camera so much in this radio station. We've only been asking for this for years.
Because when we first started, this is before Imus shot himself in the foot. But Imus, Don Imus, we're so dating ourselves, was on the radio. And he had TV crews in there, and they just sit like you and I are sitting here at the counter and just filmed it.
We'd be like, why don't you guys do that with us?
We couldn't understand.
No.
Especially since you do your hair and makeup every day.
Well,
you know, but we just couldn't understand why you wouldn't throw in the camera in the mix. And we were denied.
But then we did cut-ins to the 4 o'clock news.
Oh, remember that? For Cindy Brucato, I think it was the most painful for her.
Yeah,
that's why she quit again.
And Leah Remini, we did it with Leah, and we did it.
Leah McLean.
McLean, thank you. And, we've gone through a lot of people here.
For the record, one of them was not Leah Remini.
No, but
although we've talked to her.
We have. She wants to work here. Jason just talked to her yesterday.
Does her sister still live in town and listen to the show?
Yeah.
Well, hello, Sister Remini.
Yeah. And Leah was on Wendy Williams this morning.
Oh, she was?
Yes, she was. But I, of course, have a new start work time like you do and wasn't able to watch the whole thing. So I saved it to see what Leah's talking about later. But I do have to just get serious for a minute. Talking about the beginning of our show. So I'm, you know, reading the paper, and as I always do, you know, I read the obituaries,
I
see in the Star Tribune, I see Carrie Dykin, age 60, and I'm like, oh my gosh. And Carrie, we know him through his business, Blasted Art, and I want to say in 2003, Carrie
sent us.
He sent us, but he had been listening and he'd been turning on a lot of gay people to our show, and he made us vests and sandblasted our images from our very first promotional
photo
on the back of these and sent us each one.
Which I still have mine.
I have mine too, which is a sweet note, you know. And anyway, he passed away at the age of 60.
Which and is so sad. And a lot of people in the community knew him, and he always was donating his art and the sandblasting. And
his works, I mean, he did a lot of commission stuff. The Twins tribute wall at Target Field, Carrie did. The 35W Bridge Memorial. The MSP Airport Concourse Walkway. He's got stuff. The State Fair Brick Tribute Walkway. Mm-hmm. Loring Park, their brick things. And several hotels and restaurants. And just a lot of people just absolutely loved him. He's a great artist. His glasswork, his sculpture. He just was just a shining star. And he was always so kind to us, and he would send us these little pep notes. You girls are doing great, but he was an early listener.
Very, very beginning. So the photo is, like you said, our very first photo shot.
Yeah.
Shoot that we did in the conference room.
And a friend of his was the one who talked him into doing the sandblasting art on denim. So I was just really sad to see that. And my heart goes out to the family. Yeah, you were a mess when I told you when we came in today. And, he worked at some ad agencies. He worked at the Guthrie, did a lot of stuff for the Guthrie. And
it's a tragic loss.
Yeah. A friend of ours said, just remember to reach out to people right now, particularly single people. There is such an epidemic of loneliness happening because we've been in this pandemic for so long. Months and months and months.
And you were even talking about the effect on men today.
Men have, there's a new study, it's not surprising, but men are having a harder time with what Dutch researchers have been studying this since March, since the pandemic hit, and they've had three big studies. But what they're calling the second wave of lockdowns and,
I think it hit people. It's
hitting people, but really hitting guys, and their social circle is so different. And anyway, a friend of his just, said to us, if you could remind people to reach out, call people so they can hear your voice, reach
instead
out and
of
talk,
texting, hey, how are you?
Or something, a messenger, Facebook messenger.
It's been a super, I think no one can disagree here. It's been a horribly hard year for everybody. But like you said, the second wave, when it came around again and things were getting locked down, I know how much dread we felt.
Yeah.
But we have so many friends, that we can reach out to and family. And we have a place to work,
even though there's not very many people here. But, like Carrie was an artist, so he probably spent a lot of time alone,
completely isolated
and alone. So anyway, we just remember Carrie. 10 years ago, he climbed Mount Everest. He had these, I wonder who's got the cockatiels, but he was just a wonderful,
wonderful man.
And he really turned a lot of people insisted that they listen to us, and he was one of the people, and that got the gay boys listening. And as I told you, once the gay guys discover you, the rest will follow. Rocco, that was
a Sex in the City line, I believe, way back when.
It was a theory of mine,
and it's true.
So anyway, our heart goes out to his family, and of course the people that were, truly close to him. So anyway,
sad.
Yeah, very, very sad. Something that might make you just smile for a second. If you remember last year, I think it was last January, a young lady, a UCLA gymnast, went viral with her epic floor routine set to Beyonce.
Yes.
And she competes for, she was a junior last year, and she is back, Nia Dennis. We posted it, and she had a near perfect floor routine, and it's Beyonce, Soulja Boy, Missy Elliott, Kendrick Lamar, and it's got some very fun choreography on top of some very intense tumbles, and she won it, and this is her senior year at UCLA. So
that's posted on the Lori and Julia show page.
All right, listen, we come back. It's our story we can't get enough of. Happy birthday,
Pookie,
woman.
Happy birthday, and we always, always, always miss her birthday because we're always at the SAG Awards.
That's correct.
And then I always forget it. And right. So finally, like this year, I'm like, what
day is your birthday?
Your damn birthday. Yeah. So I know. So I'm like, first thing this morning, because I don't do Facebook, and that's where you usually get all the alerts. Like
a Facebook memory came up of 2013 with you while we were doing our tour of the Shrine Auditorium, and you were sitting with the cardboard cutout of Bradley Cooper.
Oh, Bradley. Back when we were in love, and he would just text me all the time. It was maddening. But anywho, Pooks, happy birthday.
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this Saturday night, Wendy Williams' Lifetime movie, followed by a documentary, both with Wendy's cooperation, are airing on Lifetime on Saturday night. And then they'll replay on Lifetime, you know, a million times. But Wendy was making the rounds of, she was on GMA, she was on The View, she was on the Jess Cagle show.
So a movie and a documentary.
And a documentary. Okay. And the start of her show today, I'm expecting this to be quite dishy and going to be painful for her ex-husband. Apparently he's made a lot of enemies.
Kevin.
She calls him Calvin. It must be some kind of a dig. Calvin. But here,
Calvin drinks milk.
Yeah, here's Wendy Williams, how you doing on GMA this morning.
Not one, but two films, the movie and the documentary, which has a great name. Tell people about the name and how you came about it.
Lifetime and I, we were on a call, a big conference call, lots of smart people, and they gave me some ideas for names. And I said, all these smart people on the phone, nobody would believe that we haven't named the movie, but the movie is done, and so is the documentary. I said, oh, what a mess. And they said, perfect. I said, what? And they said, what a mess. I said, well, that actually is perfect. So it's turned out to be quite messy, but quite a learning experience for me, learning about myself, and also hopefully people, Robin, in between the tears and the laughter, and I can't believe this is what she survived. Hopefully they'll learn a few takeaways for their own lives, or else just be entertained.
And I think we're going to be, I mean, they showed a trailer. Is that the only audio we have, Rocco?
I got one more clip.
Okay, let's go ahead and play that first.
Bill, let's follow up on that. You've had a lot of challenges over the last few years. That's been no secret at all. So what exactly did you learn from this experience?
That I'm fearless. And fearless to a fault. You know, I'll walk right to the edge, look over, and if it's too high, I will not jump. But, you know, this is my story. It's my factual story, and the documentary is a must-see. The movie is a must-see, but those are actors, and we could only fit 2 hours worth of my life in there. The documentary is real people who've actually lived my experience with me, whether it's been through observation or through actually knowing me, being around me, doing stuff with me. It's more than just, you know, my family, because then that's a corny documentary. They're, you know, all they say are good things about you and just when you were little. Me being a little girl is a part of it, but a small part. Then the rest of the story is, you know, people who've hired me at radio and fired me at radio, people who have not believed in my career and said one of the worst days of their careers are when they got rid of me or doubted me. And all those relationships have made up. We've all grown.
And on her show today, she said, you know, a lot of her staffers are included. And she said she called out...
About Wendy Williams.
Yeah. She called out her ex-husband, Calvin, as she calls him. And she said, Sharina Hudson, you better be ready for your name to be on a lot of people's tongues and a hot topic because you happen to be the one who kept his baby.
Ooh.
Then she named the baby's name. And poor little Journey, she says, she's going to be... rumored, and apparently
she named. Okay, so this is her son's Yep. All right.
Doesn't fine. Matter. She okay. is
a woman's
apparently. Board. She said in this movie.
All these crazy alien stories can't be true, can they? Hey, it's Stephen Diener, host of the Unidentified Alien Podcast. And whether you're new to the conversation or have been looking into it for years, you need to check out the fastest growing alien show out there, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, or UAP for short. There's a crazy amount of alien encounter stories out there from all over the world. And the beauty of it is that I bring them all to you and let you decide what you believe. Download and subscribe to UAP on any of the major podcasting platforms. And you can also find it on UAPpodcast.com.
I'm Bradley Trainer,
and I'm Don McClain. We have a podcast called Blinded by the Item.
A blind item is gossip about a celebrity with their name left out. It's a guessing game, and you can play along. The item might be like, this A-list star carries a Birkin bag worth more than the average person's house to the gym to work out.
Pretty sure that's J-Lo.
And P.S. the person behind all of this is Kris Jenner,
LLC. We drop a new episode every weekday so the fun never ends.
Blinded by the Item. Listen wherever you get podcasts and watch us on the Blinded by the Item YouTube channel.
Movie, we learned that while Kevin had he had a relationship with this woman for 15 of their 20 years together. And when they had the baby together, he was begging Wendy for forgiveness and telling her they were meant to be together, but he was very controlling with her. She said he cheated the whole time that they were together. She didn't realize like how isolated he was. She on The View today, she said, you know, Kevin was my manager, but he was my manager that made sure I, you know, didn't have access to certain things. And Lifetime had approached me before they wanted to do a movie and have a real life drama. And he said, no, we're not interested. You know, it's going to be a big network that does it. And she just said, you know, there was a lot of stuff that you see in the documentary where she just absolutely breaks down about what a fool she was. Her Graves' disease,
right?
Which, you know, people don't really know a lot about what that is. Her thing with her legs and
lipedema.
Yeah. So
did she talk about? Well, we had heard that before because when she was on with Andy Cohn, I don't know, maybe 5 years ago now or four.
Andy was shady.
She's like, why haven't you had me on your show? And he's like, because I didn't like your husband.
No, Kevin would always say no.
Oh, Kevin would say
he
no.
He would turn
oh,
it down.
I thought it was because she didn't like.
No, no.
I thought he said, no one likes your husband. You're going to get a lot more people to come on your show now because he's out of the picture. He did say something like that.
Kevin was the manager, Calvin. So anyway, I think it looks good. The trailers that I saw, Wendy's got to be happy with the actress that they got to portray her.
Right.
And okay. Yeah.
So it's this Sunday night.
No, Saturday.
Saturday night. What
Saturday night is when Lifetime premieres their new movies. Like last Saturday, it was Salt and Peppa.
Did anyone watch that?
I have it on the DVR, but I didn't watch it. And then I went down the rabbit hole of Rocco White. Spinderella wasn't included in the movie at all.
Oh, she wasn't?
No.
I don't even know who that is, so we'll just let that.
On that or I think
Salt and Pepper would say, well, the name of the band was Salt and Pepper.
Yeah, but every good act needs a good DJ.
Well, they obviously went out on bad terms because it wasn't Salt and Pepper featuring Spinderella. It was just
vintage scandal. I see.
Yeah, there you go. So I didn't watch it, but Wendy said it was a little glossed over.
Okay.
When she talked about it, because, you know, she was giving herself a plug. She said, this stuff isn't glossed over. People are going to be shocked.
Well, she's had a very bright, vivid life. I mean, bright colors. I mean, she was made her way in radio in New York City. She was on the hot shows. She had the drug issues, massive cocaine problems and got her. I don't know if it got
I'm
her,
kind of excited to see it.
I think it would be good to see. And she's a survivor.
Yeah. But when she was like, looked at the camera and, well, Shireen Hudson, you just happened to be the one who kept the baby. I was just like, they immediately panned to her staff, which is all that's in the audience. And even with their masks on, you could just see. Eyes, hands.
You just
are
said
up.
That, Wendy, out loud.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just said that.
But
wow.
Apparently her staff is so happy he's gone.
Oh, yeah. He sounds like he was just a disaster. It would be horrible.
Oh, and then she said, you know, and some people are blinded by pretty new Gucci handbags and stuff like that. But I know there's more to a partner than what kind of a bag they can buy her or a car.
Remember, because she got her the red Bentley or something. He bought the girlfriend the Bentley, and she lived a mile and a half away in a house mm-hmm. that Wendy bought, and then they had the baby.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That would be humiliating.
Yeah. Go in guns blazing. It's mm-hmm. it's your story, Wendy.
Oh, gosh.
So we're just going to watch it. Mm-hmm. How you doing?
Yep.
How you doing?
All right. Listen, we got to call London. We're going to talk with Julia Kelly about her latest book, The Last Garden in England. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us. We have a real treat. We have the Julia Kelly with us. She's the international best-selling author. Maybe you've read The Whispers of War or Light Over London. We yep. are new to you, fans. Julia. And we just read your fabulous book, The Last Garden in England. So thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Yes. Absolutely. So we understand you grew up in New York. You lived in L.A. for a while. You lived in Iowa, and now you live in London.
Well, a little reverse. So I grew up in L.A. I went to school in Iowa, and then I moved to New York. So I keep moving further and further east, and then I went to London. So that's where I live now.
Oh, my God. Lovely. All right. So give people the setup of the book, and I just have to say that is one of the most beautiful book covers I've ever seen.
It really is.
It is wonderful, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It really is. And we judge a lot of books on the covers.
As you should.
We do.
Well, the book is it's a historical novel, so it's told in three different time periods, and it's all set around a fictional garden. And so it's the garden's creation, the garden in 1944 during World War II, and then also the garden after it's been abandoned, and a woman comes in to try to restore it and bring life back to it. And while doing that, she uncovers some mysteries and some different things that happened in those other time periods. So it all pulls everything together.
It's really,
it makes you want a garden. I'll tell you that. I mean, it really, I stopped to Google flowers. I've never done that before reading a book before, but the descriptions that you would write of the, and there were flowers I wasn't familiar with. So I do think that your book not only will inspire, people to read your other novels, but also be interested in gardening. And I'm curious because in your acknowledgement, if you would share with people, like how you got the idea for The Last Garden in England.
Well, you know, my father is a wonderful gardener, and growing up in L.A., he had this love for English border gardens, and so he would, you know, be digging in the dirt, and of course, as his daughter, I was right there with him, pulling up weeds and things like that. I'm not sure if I was that helpful, mm-hmm. but I did fall in love with gardens, and so, you know, when I decided I wanted to write a book about a garden, it just seemed natural to have it set in England, and I think there's always something a little mysterious and ephemeral about gardens. So it felt like it really worked with all these different time periods that were just weaving in and out.
Yeah. And then the whole idea of, you know, requisitioned houses
mm-hmm.
in World War I and World War II. And that really did happen.
It did. And actually, my parents are in the UK now as well. And they live in a house that's much more modest than the house that I write about. But it was a requisitioned home as well. So, you know, as I started to think about what would the life of this garden and the life of the people associated with it have been like during World War II, I decided I wanted to set the house. It would become a convalescent hospital during the war. So you had all these different people recovering there, you know, soldiers, doctors, nurses were working there. And then you had the actual family that lived in the house as well. And everybody was trying to sort of make it through while doing everything they could for the war effort. So it creates a really kind of interesting background, I think, for that time period.
Mm-hmm. And when you're, you know, if you're just joining us, we're talking with the author, Julia Kelly. Not to be confused with the actress, because there's a lot of you out there.
There are, it's a common name.
There are, and the book is The Last Garden in England, and like Lori said, the cover's amazing, and just the story about gardening, and I think, you know, set in the different time areas, different times that these five different women kind of grew up in. But I love that Vanita. First of all, I loved her
Venetia.
Name. Venetia or Vanita or whatever, however you would say it. You mm-hmm. know, that she was this pioneer garden designer, landscape design way back when, and how she was like, the men would listen to her way back at the turn of the last century. I mean, that was kind of fun having, you know, her be so innovative and creative.
Yeah, I really like talking about women who do things that are a bit unexpected in history. And it's all based in, you know, there were women who were these pioneering garden designers, not many of them. But I loved the idea that she was doing something really unique that let her be creative and let her have a livelihood and all of those things at the same time, even in 1907, which is a time that we don't usually think about women having all of this independence.
Mm-hmm. And so many people took up gardening this year.
Yeah,
I mean, exactly.
It really was
the year for it.
It mm-hmm. is the year for it. So how did your whole family end up in London, Julia?
Well, my mother is British, so okay. I've always had this connection to the UK, and I'm also a citizen here, too. So, you know, as I said before, I grew up in Los Angeles, but I've been very lucky and been able to move over here, as did the rest of the family. So we're kind of living the English expat, American expat dream a bit.
And Prince Harry is the English expat living in Montecito.
Exactly. We obviously decided to just switch roles.
There you go.
Have yours, you know, we're brand new to you. This was the first book that we've read of yours. Have you been optioned for, you know, TV or movies or anything?
You know, I haven't, but I'm hoping the fact that you've said that out loud yes. into the world means that it will happen. I would absolutely love that. And I think a lot of authors have that dream of one day seeing their book turned into a TV show or a movie.
The idea of the gardens and how the gardens, you know, the lover's garden, the mother's garden, the this garden. I mean, it just sounds so romantic and it sounded, I mean, just so opulent to have all these different types
well,
of
gardens.
Well,
it's one of the things that we've loved so about lovely. Watching Downton Abbey or yep. even Bridgerton. Mm-hmm. It's that whole, you know, so many garden scenes and you're just like, they're amazing.
They're rooms.
The clothing could be beautiful too. I mean, I think it's a great idea. We should do it.
Is it hard, Julia, in writing, like when you have that, those, you know, you've got present day 1907, 1944, How do you keep track of your storylines? Yeah. Do you do one story first? And then, you know, I'm just curious how that process
is. That's exactly right. Yeah. So I wrote the 1907 story first and then 1944 builds on it. So I wrote mm-hmm. that next. And then I did the present day story. And to keep everything straight, when I was putting them all together, I had lots of post-it notes on a blank kitchen wall. And so it looked a little scary if anybody walked in unexpectedly, but it was really helpful in kind of keeping myself organized.
It's really
Julia, what was the book? What was the book that you read that you were like, I want to be a writer, that inspired you to write?
Oh, there's so many. You know, I think one of the books that really, when I was a teenager, really got me, because the writer, the heroine of it is an author, is a book called I Capture the Castle by Dodie Smith. Mm-hmm. There was a film made of it in, I think, the early 2000s.
Yes!
And I saw that, and then I read the book, and I thought, this is what I want to do.
Okay. And did you go to Iowa because you went to the writing?
No. You know, I went to Grinnell College, so not the Iowa Writers Workshop, but kind of in close proximity. There's a good writing tradition in Iowa.
Yes, so. There is. And in Minneapolis too, with the Loft exactly. Literary Center. Mm-hmm. No, a lot of people have made their way via Iowa writing writers.
Julia, how do you like doing your book chats in Zooming and virtually? How do you feel about that?
Well, you know, to be honest, it's really helpful because I've been, you know, for most of my books, I've been here in the UK. So mm-hmm. I haven't been able to interact with readers in the US. And I also have a really great group of readers in Canada as well. So getting to actually see, you know, some different readers in different places, different libraries, different shows that I can go on, it's just been wonderful. So I have to say, you know, the pandemic obviously has made things very difficult, but this is one silver lining that it's been fantastic meeting a whole bunch of different people. I probably never would have been able to because of being over here in the UK.
Right. Well, we've had other authors tell us that too, that it opens it up to even maybe more people than normally would
go to a book, a local book, you know, store and go and hear you talk.
Yeah.
Do you, Julia, you know, we always have to ask our authors, you know, the last great book that you read.
Ooh, that's a challenging question. So you want a recommendation for
it? Yeah.
I think, you know, what I really loved and I can't stop raving about is Kristen Harmel's The Book of Lost Names.
Oh, we have that.
I think that's an excellent book. Oh. Really, really well done. So I've been recommending that to everybody.
I think it's the same publisher as yours.
That's right.
Yeah,
I was very lucky and got to chat with her about it.
Yeah, we have that book on our bookshelf.
Here. You guys do like a series, like authors interviewing authors?
We have done a little bit of that, absolutely. And she's an absolutely fantastic interviewer also. So it's always fun to sit down and chat.
What's the one question that authors that you don't like to hear?
Well, it's always tricky when people ask you, depending on where you are in the process of the next book, when somebody says, what are you working on next? And sometimes I can answer that really honestly, and sometimes I have to kind of tap dance a little bit and try to make sure I don't give too much away just in case, you know, something changes in the process. So
yeah,
that's a tricky one sometimes.
Let's enjoy the book that we're talking to you about. Julia, make note of that, that we don't ask that again.
We usually don't, but yeah. You know, unless it's someone who's a prolific writer that has something out every year. You know, we've got a couple of those authors that we have on all the time, like Brian Freeman or something like that. But, you know, if you're just joining us, Julia Kelly is the author. The book is The Last Garden in England. It's just a delicious read, and it's fun to go into the different time zones, and it's fun to go into the dirt, and, you know, and it's fun, the romance, you know, parts of it. It's really just a delightful book that you've written with, like Lori said, our favorite color. Our favorite cover.
Bar none.
Thank you.
Oh, my gosh.
It really, it's scary because when we get some books and we're like, oh, why would they do that cover? And
I mean, it looks like it's a hand-painted cover. I was so struck. I feel like you're really going to, people will just really pick up your book and just, well, they may have read one of your other books. But
which we want to read now.
Yeah. anyway, just based on that, like, I want to read The Light Over London and whatever else you think we should read of yours. Where should we?
I think The Light Over London is a great place to start. And
okay.
Then The Whispers of War is my one after that. So,
Oh, well, this was a treat. Julia, you got a nice name too. All right, honey. Cheers. And is the mood good over there across the pond?
It's getting there.
Okay.
It's getting there. I think everybody's hunkered down and just trying to make the best of things.
Yeah.
The mood here is very happy.
Yes.
And everyone is trying to, but we're trying to get
the vaccine, and that's the thing that everyone is, the whole world is like waiting for that.
Well, while we're waiting, we're reading. Yes, we are reading a ton, and thank you for your book, The Last Garden in England. We've got a couple copies to give away. If you haven't gotten one of our books lately, 651-641-1071, Wacko will get your information. We'll call you. And Julia, thanks again for your time, and it's just delightful to meet you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks,
absolutely.
Julia. Bye.
Best of luck.
All right, listen, we come back. We're going to go from gardens to The Bachelor. Okay, it's Tuesday. It's 3:45, so it's time to rehash The Bachelor. And I got to say that Bachelor Mike, is that his name?
No.
What is his name? Matt.
Oh.
I knew it was a four-letter word.
But his last name is James. It's Matt James. He's got two first names.
He
is boring.
So boring.
He's so boring, and that's why they introduced five new women last night. He's such a nice guy.
Right.
But he doesn't have any zhuzh. Yeah, he just doesn't have any zhuzh.
Yeah, maybe he's so good-looking and hot, he hasn't worked on his personality.
He hasn't needed to, and he's an only child, so he was... You know, maybe his mom just adored him. No
I'm fascinated
what.
With
We're
his
so
extra
bitchy.
Long fingers. Have you seen his double? He's got double jointed his fingers.
No, but he's got very long, skinny legs.
Yeah, well, he's a beautiful
specimen
of a guy. He's
but he
very
is kind of boring.
So boring. He has the same boring conversations.
Yeah.
They're having to. What did your does your son think he's boring?
Okay, well, here's how funny it is, because my kid's an expert. I swear he should write for Bachelor Nation or something. So he it's true. So when you're going and you're having Matt talk about the group dates with the women that he's with, if they don't show the woman and, you know, and do a face to face with the woman, like a confession,
yeah,
she's not getting picked.
Right.
So if they just show Matt talking to him, they're gone.
Right.
That one's not getting picked. That one's not getting picked. That one's not getting picked. I'm like, how do you know, Mom, I've been through this enough. And so unless they have a sit down kind of face to face solo with the camera,
right,
he knows that. So that was very funny to hear. When the new women showed up, you know, we just kind of rate them. You know, it's terrible. Yeah. That's how people watch this show. But the one from Minnesota, from Woodbury, the teacher
from Edina.
She's from Minnesota. She teaches, Woodbury, I think, and she teaches in Edina.
Yeah, she lives in Edina and maybe Normandale Hills Elementary in Bloomington is where she's teaching.
She's darling. Her name is Michelle. We talked about her a long time ago when
Michelle
the
Young,
started.
Yes. She got to go on a good date, zip lining and a hot air balloon.
So fun.
So an adrenaline date always makes people closer. Yeah, Rocco, if you didn't know that, that's an old bachelor ploy.
You need to go
I can't picture you going on a zip lining date. Is that something
I've
you
done
do?
I've done it. Okay. I've done it a million times. Mm-hmm. It's fun. Okay. It's not attractive.
You
don't want anyone to see where the fat gathers on your body.
Yeah, the moose knuckle is really something. Even a woman gets a moose knuckle.
And just how you're so squeezed into that harness.
Yes.
It's not a good look, but I would do it.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's exciting.
But they were
fun.
Having immediate chemistry.
Immediate.
She was one of the introduced five girls.
Yeah.
The villains on this show are so bad. That Queen Victoria with the sty in her eye.
Terrible sty. Every time she come back out, I'd say to my son, there's a sty in her eye. I was like, Mom, you said it. I'm like, there's a sty in her eye.
But she and that other girl were just so biatchy and petty and mean and boring.
And her jaw, the other girl's from Owatonna, that Anna.
With the mouth?
Yeah,
the
with
bulldog
the mouth.
And
she has bitchy resting face. It's so bad. I'm like, you are coming off so bad.
Yeah, I know.
Minnesota needs some help. We have the first
case. She lives
case
in Chicago
from,
now.
I'm coming from Brazil. Don't give us a bad name anymore.
I know.
We're having a year. You know, but so I just was like, oh my gosh.
I did like the group date where they got in 1,000-pound pumpkin gourds and went across the lake.
They had to paddle like it was a kayak. Rocco, I thought that was hysterical. And that looked like fun.
And then they had to get in squirrel costumes and look for acorns with their names. It was hysterical.
That was hysterical. When those
women.
But that just looked like so much fun paddling.
I would have been like the girl paddling around in a circle.
I would have won that one.
Yeah, you would have won that one.
It would have been a sports and a paddling thing. I could do that.
Anyway, I want Matt to put a stop to this nonsense when they were talking about this one girl might be an escort or something. It's just so boring. I like when we have good villains.
Well, I'm sick of the queen.
Victoria, she can go
home.
Don't
you think she can go
home? He needs to send Victoria and Anna home, but we know he won't, and blah, blah, blah. There's still too many people's names.
There's too many people's names.
But I will say, I did
like our Minnesota girl, though.
Yes, her name is Michelle Young, but he did post, Matt, it might not be the brightest bulb, he posted another photo.
Oh, no.
People are...
Oh, no. Why is he doing this? He's not supposed to... Tell me what it is.
Well, he posted, captioned a shot of him meeting Michelle for the first time outside of the resort. Better late than never. So is she runner-up? Is she the one? It just seems like a strange thing to post.
Is COVID just going to everyone's mind? Maybe. Is everyone just done? And don't care. So bust me, Bachelor. I don't care anymore.
Maybe. I don't know.
Just sick of it all.
Yeah.
Just
don't get sick of it yet.
No, we still got time.
So anyway.
But it was still kind of fun.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I'm with my boy, he fast forwards it because he can't stand some people.
Yeah, I fast forward to people too. And I fast forward to one-on-one dates. And then I look if they stop and kiss. I check that out. But there's a lot of boring ass conversations.
And he wants to, and bless his heart, he wants to get deep with everybody. But sometimes we don't care. There's too many people involved to get deep.
To get deep, I agree.
Give us just the highlights.
By the way, Big Sky comes back tonight on ABC. And you know who's joining the cast?
Well,
Ted Levine. You might not go, who's Ted Levine? Well, his most famously remembered by being Buffalo Bill in Silence of the Lambs. But we've seen him in...
Okay, that was in, what, 1992?
No, but he's been in other shows. You recognize him.
He's scary looking.
He's been in a lot of shows. He played a... Was he on Justified? He was in a cowboy... He was in another show that we watched. The Bridge.
He was in the... Oh, now that, people, if you want a good show to binge, The Bridge.
The Bridge.
I'm writing it down.
The Bridge.
Oh, my gosh.
It was on AMC, I believe.
Okay, I never heard of that one.
What's her name? Who's the actress?
Diane Kruger.
Is in it. And
the guy from...
Martin Bashir, yeah. the what is his actor? Bashir Shamir. I don't know what his name is. Him. But anyway, that's a good show. That is a good show. And Rocco, okay. I came home last night and I said, Casey, remember when we watched Gomorrah? I said, why didn't we like that? Because I was thinking about...
Damien Bashir.
Mm-hmm. I said, I was thinking about, there's not ever been a show that's been too violent for us. What was it? So he looks it up and he goes, we watched it on like HBO in 2016 when he came out. And he said, remember, I couldn't read fast enough.
Oh,
we can try it again because I've gotten so good at reading because we've watched so many shows that are
subtitles.
From other countries and stuff.
That's his... Derek called that Casey said that.
Well, and they do offer an English dubbed version on HBO Max.
We couldn't figure out how to turn it on.
Well, maybe this time it's easier with HBO Max. I don't know.
That's when we watched it last night.
Oh, you did?
I don't think they dubbed it in English. And besides, I'm working on my Italian.
Yeah.
And
I noticed there was two options you could click on right before you did it. But yeah.
Yeah.
Gomorrah
and
Napoli.
We watched three episodes in case he's like I'm so happy I can read faster now.
Nice. There you go, Casey.
In 2016 we had not that much time and we just moved on from
sure.
it. But there's, it's kind of based on a true story, the Kamara crime family in Napoli and stuff.
So now do you feel like you're gonna go back to it?
Gotta watch it.
All right.
We'll be back.